What's up, everybody? My name is David EJ Berger. You can find me at Carl Jr. on Twitter, and welcome to Training Camp Dialed In. I'll be featuring phone calls with NFL writers and reporters from the actual sidelines of camp. Well, that's normally how this works. They'll be virtually on the sidelines this season, but I'll still be getting their inside knowledge about the teams they cover from a fantasy perspective. This is the place to be all month long, as I'm bringing you 3 to 4 shows per week filled with football knowledge that's going to help your team win your leagues this season. So you need to subscribe to the Dynasty Happy Hour feed, the exclusive home of this super short run, super niche, yet super essential podcast for the month of August. And this is my second time recording this intro today. Eddie the editor was supposed to be back. Sadly, he is not. But he will be, I hope. This is episode 3 of the season. We've talked some Seahawks and Broncos so far. And we're going to keep the saddle on and head east to the great state of Indiana, known for its horses. Anyway, we're talking some Indianapolis Colts. I got the pleasure of once again dialing up Kevin Bowen. He's the Indianapolis Colts writer and reporter for 1075thefan.com, the home of Indianapolis sports. And he's got his own podcast, Kevin's Corner, where he talks some indie sports as well. You can find him at kbowen1070 on Twitter. He's about to give the definitive guide to the Indianapolis Colts for the 2020 season. What are we waiting for? Let's bring him on. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Bowen. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm very excited to talk about the Indianapolis Colts and to have you back. And
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And to get the football season going here. Why don't we hop right in? So far on the podcast, I've been kicking it off with the less than fun stuff, the COVID of it all. That way we can get it out of the way. But I do think that people are curious how each team is handling this situation around the league. Can you give us an idea of what it's like at Colts camp in 2020, a year unlike any other?
Yeah, that's certainly true. So far, the Colts have had two guys appear on the COVID reserve list. Malik Henry, a wideout, and Jackson Porter, a corner. Neither guy, you know, is supposed to challenge for a 53-man roster spot. But, you know, a week into it, and I think I speak for the entire NFL, to be honest with you, David, I'm pretty impressed by the numbers. I mean, we're talking about, you know, what, less than 1% of all tests have appeared positive, and those are a lot of tests around the league with rosters obviously at 90, you know, back at the start of last week, and some of those have dwindled a little bit. But I mean, those are very, very impressive numbers in my mind, because I kind of felt like the first week it was like, oh boy, you know, you have all these people traveling back into their respective NFL cities from, you know, potential hotspots from where they were training around the United States. So the Colts have, you know, checked out pretty well with those numbers as far as what they're doing. They've created kind of one-way hallways. You know, all meals are to go, no buffet style eating at their facility. You know, a lot of social distancing within meeting rooms. Each player, each staff member, I think each person in the building will have a contact tracer. It's a small little chip. Frank Reich actually showed us this the other day. And basically, let's say it's the color blue and has a very low beep when you're not within 6 feet of each other. If you get within 6 feet of someone else, then it beeps a little bit louder and it changes colors as well. So I think those are kind of all the steps that the Colts are taking and try to create as safe of a bubble as they can when players and staff members are in the facility.
Wow, it really does sound like a brave new world out there. And I know that practices technically really won't get going until about mid-August, but it seems like the teams are out there in the shorts and the t-shirt, throwing the ball around, getting that chemistry right.
Yeah, you know, strength and conditioning is obviously the big focus of the first week of training camp. But, you know, Phillip Rivers is allowed to go out there and throw with his pass catchers. And we know full well how important that is for a guy that, you know, is dealing with different pass catchers for the first time in his entire career. So it's vitally important for a guy that missed, you know, when you think back to the spring, you're supposed to have those 10 OTA sessions, a 3-day mini camp. I mean, those are valuable on-field reps that Rivers wasn't able to get. So Frank Reich told a funny story that basically what happens is, you know, coaches aren't allowed to be out there yet and watching these, you know, pseudo workouts happen with Rivers and his pass catchers. But basically, as soon as Phillip Rivers comes off the field, he immediately comes into Frank Reich's office and chats with him and tells him, okay, this is what happened today. These were the guys that, you know, shine. these were the routes that we ran, these were the throws that I made, et cetera, et cetera. So he's kind of Frank Reich's eyes and ears and I guess arm as well on the practice field. So next week, you know, they'll be allowed to get out there in you know, helmets and not full pads just yet. And then, like you said, mid-August is when things will ramp up.
We are recording this just a few hours ahead of the new opt-out deadline, so there is a bit of a timestamp for this. But what players have opted out so far, and do you think there's going to be any surprise last-minute opt-outs ahead of this deadline?
Yeah, you know, as of Tuesday morning, the Colts were one of, I think, 8 or 9 teams that hadn't had a single player opt out. Now, since then, they've had 3 players opt out. No projected starters. A backup linebacker, Sky Moore, who I think was a long shot to make the team. And then 2 guys in the secondary who, you know, if I were going to make a depth chart, I would have put them as kind of the number 4 corner and the number 4 safety, probably on the 53-man roster. So that was Marvell Tell at corner and then Roland Milligan at safety. Tell is probably the name that Colts fans know the most. He was a 5th-round pick out of USC last year, made the position switch from safety to corner and had some encouraging moments and someone that the staff liked. And, you know, again, he was probably their 4th corner, which you don't expect that guy to play a whole lot, but he's 1 injury away from all of a sudden playing a whole lot. So I think that is a notable loss. You know, Tell is a guy that, like I said, he was making a position switch. So now you lose a year of development with a young corner. And if you look at the Colts depth chart, you know, Xavier Rhodes, TJ Carey, 2 veteran corners that they went out and signed last offseason or this past offseason, they're both on 1-year deals and they're both around 30 years old. So their stay here in Indianapolis, it might not be for long. And so that's why I think Tell's development is so critical to this football team. So I think he's the most notable loss that they've had so far. Milligan, again, just probably providing safety depth, but you know, something I think that, David, sometimes we're kind of like, oh, it's just an old coaching cliche of you prepare like a starter and your practice squad guys need to go out and, you know, act like they're going to be a starter. We could laugh at that in prior years. That is 100% true this season. And while Marvell Tell and Roland Milligan for the Colts might not matter that much on September 13th, come November 13th, you might need them a whole lot more. So, just a couple of notable secondary depth losses so far for the Colts. And as of expecting anyone else, you know, Frank Reich said he's optimistic that no one else was going to opt out. You know, it's kind of possible to project, but I kind of feel like if you were on the fence, you probably would have done it by now. But we'll see here in the final couple hours.
Really great stuff, Kevin. Thank you so much. This is why we're here. We're getting the nitty-gritty of these teams, even though things are a bit different, and we'll dive into each player room in a minute. But this is a training camp pod. What storylines are you tracking this August as we're sitting here in the first week, in the first bastion of training camp? What are you looking forward to tracking on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I would say on that side of the ball, you go back to the Phillip Rivers talk. You know, the LA Chargers, you know, said no to Phillip Rivers without having kind of that ready-made top 10 draft pick, you know, like a Patrick Mahomes thing with Alex Smith or something like that. And so I think there is a prove-it mentality for Rivers of a new franchise, a fresh start, moving his, you know, 11-person family here to the Indianapolis area, all of those things. So that is clearly the biggest storyline. A couple others that I'm watching, the offensive line had all 5 starters start every single game last season. The Colts don't have a lot of proven depth behind that group. You know, some injuries are going to happen. How well does that unit play? Because I think it is known as one of the better units in the NFL. And then at running back, you traded up for Jonathan Taylor. I mean, that was a kind of a big deal in the middle of the second round. How do him and Marlon Mack work together in tandem? I think that's something to watch as well. Wideout wise, T.Y. Hilton has, you know, had a great career, but he's been a little banged up here in recent seasons. So I think that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Love the top line stuff. And we'll get into a little bit a more minute detail here as we talk about these guys. And let's do it. Let's get into the fun stuff. We love fantasy points. We want to see touchdowns. We want to see catches, big plays. And the Colts seem like a team geared to provide plenty. Last year's bombshell announcement of quarterback Andrew Luck's retirement sent this team into an impromptu plan B. And while this offense didn't see the heights of 2018, where it landed in the top 5 of total points scored, it managed to finish a respectable 17th in that category. category in 2019, all things considered. And they managed this by significantly dialing down the pass attempts and utilizing the run, finishing in the top five of rush attempts in 2019 after they were second in pass attempts in 2018. Colts do carry over consistency in head coach Frank Wright and offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni. But in comes Philip Rivers, as you mentioned, second round pick Jonathan Taylor. So we're going to need some help here, Kevin. What can we expect from this offense in 2020 in terms of scheme and formations, especially since they've been a bit topsy-turvy the last 2 years in their play calling commitments?
Yeah, I still think it's going to be a team that's very committed to running the football, more so than the average team in the NFL. You know, like I said earlier, you've got five offensive linemen that come back for now a third straight season. And if you look at those offensive linemen, you've invested top 40 draft picks in four of those five guys. So a whole lot of resources invested in that unit. Then you go to running back and, you know, Jonathan Taylor, again, trading up for him. And then you bring back a 1,000-yard rusher in Marlon Mack. So I think they want to alleviate, you know, some of the kind of hero ball that maybe Philip Rivers thought he had to play last season. So that would mean, obviously, having a committed rushing attack, finding production there for sure. So I think those are that'll kind of be the major focus for this offense. You have some talented wideouts. You have a couple of tight ends that have produced in this NFL at a pretty high level. So they're going to throw the football, probably test things vertically a little bit more than they did last year. That was something that was missing, I think, with Jacoby Brissett under center. But still, this is going to be a very committed ground attack. That's their bread and butter. That's what got them to be, you know, a 10-win football team 2 years ago. That's what got them to, you know, have a nice start last season, is having that kind of stout rushing attack. So I still think that'll be the strength and the focus for this offense.
Well, we've talked about Philip Rivers a little bit so far, but let's dig in a little bit more. Colts GM Chris Ballard recently praised Philip Rivers for his love of football. But then again, we all love football, especially this time of year when optimism is peaking for the new season. And while he's coming off an almost 5,000-yard season in Los Angeles, he also had his lowest touchdown output since 2007 with only 23 and threw the third most interceptions in the league with 20. How optimistic are you, as someone who knows this team, about Rivers helming this offense this season?
Yeah, you know, I go back to what I said earlier. It's a big prove-it year. Like you said, threw 20 picks. I mean, that's a big number. I think what the Colts feel like they will give Rivers is they'll give him a better offensive line. They'll give him games where he's not down as much in the fourth quarter. I think if you looked at his 20 interceptions last year, I want to say 9 of them came in the final quarter. So obviously that's a big chunk. Again, felt like he had to play hero ball. A team that was 5-11. You know, things like that. So I think those are all kind of areas where the Colts just feel like they're going to put him in better situations, where he's going to have a rushing attack that he's not had in quite a while. He's going to be playing behind arguably the best offensive line that he's ever played behind. And the Colts made a big change on the defensive side of the ball and trading for DeForest Buckner. So they think they'll be better with that unit as well. So I think all of those areas they point to as, okay, we're not going to put Rivers in this situation like he was in last year on a week-in, week-out basis. He knows this offense very well. Having said that, I'd say the one biggest difference is you don't have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, who are, I would say, arguably the best wideout duo in the NFL. So those are two bigger body guys, especially Williams, who can make some big-time plays. Rivers isn't going to have that here. And when you throw the jump ball, when you throw the 50-50 ball, how do those guys react to it?
I like the respect for that duo out in Los Angeles there, Kevin. I appreciate that. They don't get as much love as I think they deserve, and I appreciate the shout out. This is a podcast that gets put out through the Dynasty Happy Hour feed, so a lot of listeners are playing fantasy for the long term. So I want to talk a little bit about Jacob Eason. What are coaches saying about him, and could he be the guy who potentially leads his team in the future?
Yeah, you know, it was a draft pick that I thought made a lot of sense, because you're in round four. Take a flyer on a position that's the most important in sports. And I think it's key, too, to remember that Philip Rivers and Jacoby Brissett are both in contract years. Rivers only signed a one-year deal. Jacoby Brissett, you know, signed the two-year contract when Andrew Luck retired, but their futures are a little bit up in the air. The Colts think Rivers will play 2 years, but you don't know when a guy's thought about retirement. So I look at Eason. I don't think he's the locked in stone future of the franchise. No, he's, you know, he really hasn't played a whole lot of football compared to his other quarterbacks that were drafted in this class. And then I think you also have to realize there's a lot of development needed, and he needs game reps. When you talk about the preseason hurting somebody, it hurts Jacob Eason maybe more so than any other Colt. He really, really needs some reps. But you can't teach the arm, and that's something that obviously is probably his best attribute. And so I think Frank Reich, known for his quarterback background and the pedigree there, obviously played the position. I think those are all kind of key areas for the Colts to try and develop Eason as best as they can. And who knows? If it works out, obviously great. If it doesn't work out, he still could be your backup of the future with Brissett hitting free agency next year and Phillip Rivers really only here for 2 years at the most. But I still think if the right quarterback is there next season in the draft, next April, the Colts would be more than willing to make that selection.
Normally I like to hit the pass catchers next, but these fantasy Twitter streets are filled with nothing but truther fights between Kansas City running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire stands and incoming Colts rookie running back Jonathan Taylor fanatics. We know what guys on the internet are saying, but what are the Colts coaches saying about JT for this season in terms of his role in the offense? And you know this team better than anybody, so this is going to be an expert take.
You know, I've always said that if you're going to draft a running back in the first or second round, you aren't waiting very long to give him the football. And I know Marlon Mack was a 1,000-yard rusher last season, and he deserves to be the starter in week one here next month. But still, and Jonathan Taylor is going to factor into it. You know, last year the Colts averaged, I think it was like 29 rushing attempts per game. You know, you got to think, okay, three or four will go to, you know, a QB sneak or a fullback or Nyheim Hines on third down, something like that. So, you know, do you give 15 to Mac and 11 to Taylor early on? Does that flip over the course of the year? I mean, we know full well the numbers Jonathan Taylor put up at Wisconsin. It's one of the greatest three-year runs in college football history for any running back. And what separates him, I think, from other Wisconsin running backs is he's an explosive runner. You know, when you think of even Melvin Gordon, but especially guys like Ron Dane, Monte Ball, you know, those guys are not going to light up the 40-yard dash. I mean, Jonathan Taylor weighs 225 and ran 4.3. I mean, you just don't see that every day. So I think when you look at that part of his game and just of his kind of pedigree, that's what made the Colts so attracted to him. So it'll be a two-headed monster this year. I think they deserve to kind of split carries for the most part. Maybe Matt gets a slight edge early on, but Mac is in a contract year. So if you're looking dynasty long-term, Jonathan Taylor could be this team's starting running back next season.
So we should expect a bit of a split from these guys, especially out of the gate. I know the coaches in the past have called it a one-and-one punch between these two, but it seems like there is a general sense within the organization that both of these guys are going to be seeing a lot of playing time.
Yes, I think that's very fair. Mac dominated the carries last year. I don't expect that to be quite as kind of stark as it was last season.
What about Nyheim Hines? Phillip Rivers in the past has always loved his pass-catching running back. How is he fitting into the offense this year?
Yeah, you know, I kind of look at Hines as the third down guy. You know, he was known for his pass-catching at North Carolina State. He actually was a receiver there for a couple of seasons. So I think that's the role. We know that Phillip Rivers has used that, you know, part of I guess, his personnel, if you will, a lot with Danny Woodhead or Darren Sproles or even last year with Austin Eckler. So I think Hines is going to have a big third down role. You know, it's not something Taylor was obviously asked to do at Wisconsin, and Marlon Mack has never really done it that extensively here in the NFL. So I think Hines is your guy on third down. I think he could catch 60, 70 balls this season. Again, Rivers is known to be kind of a check down guy with those running backs and find those guys. So I think that's advantage Nyheim Hines, and it's something the Colts want to tap into, and they just didn't use probably as much as they would have liked to last season.
So we're giving Hines a bit of a tick up in PPR leagues, maybe a play in a DFS tournament. We're liking Hines. He's going to see the field.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Okay, let's talk about the pass catchers now. The headliner is still T.Y. Hilton, still one of the best fantasy options in the league in my book, but we have Paris Campbell, who underwhelmed in his rookie season thanks to an injury, and Michael Pittman, who was looking to capitalize on his red-hot finish at USC out of the gate into his rookie season. DFS grinders hit it big with Zach Pascal, who was also returning. How are you seeing this receiver room playing out on the field?
You know, Hilton, I think, is still your number one. He's still your alpha. The passing offense goes through him as long as he's healthy. Having said that, the next three guys, they all have very kind of specific components that the offense loves. Michael Pittman's the big body guy that they haven't had. you know, 6'4", 223, and probably one of the more, him and Justin Jefferson, I think I point to as two of the more kind of ready-made wideouts with the type of production they're able to have at the collegiate level. So I think Pittman can come in here and be, you know, a pretty early impact guy. Then you look down to Paris Campbell, like you said, underwhelming when he was on the field. But still, if healthy, which he had a lot of injuries last year, he's a guy that doesn't need a whole lot of touches to impact the game. And we saw it at Ohio State. I mean, he's a big yards after catch guy. Again, doesn't need kind of the risky type of deep balls or seven-step drops or things like that. You can give him a swing pass. You can give him a screen, an underneath route, and he can make guys miss and take it from there. So I still think he's going to have an important role in this offense. And then Pascal's just Mr. Reliable. And so inevitably he's just going to be on the field and have some targets. I don't think he's going to be as big of a design focal point as some of the other guys, but still his consistency is nothing to overlook. And it's something this coaching staff really trusts. So that's where I think he can factor into, you know, a relatively consistent role, maybe not as many targets, but he's going to be on the field a decent amount.
The Colts obviously took Pittman fairly early in the draft. Is that to add weapons to this offense, or is it because maybe they're questioning what they originally believed in Paris Campbell?
Yeah, I don't think it's so much that. I think it's T.Y. Hilton's in a contract year and is the age of 30. This passing offense struggled last season. And then I go back to the body type. I mean, just even Phillip Rivers himself, you know, he's been known as a guy that, you know, does well with those bigger body wideouts. So I think that helps. But then for your future, I think it just diversifies your wideout room. You know, it'd be one thing if the Colts would have, you know, taken a Jalen Reagor, kind of a guy that is more of a speed guy like Campbell. But I just think Pittman helps complement what you have in a guy like Campbell. So I don't look at it as that. I look at it as T.Y. Hilton's getting up there. He's in a contract year, and you're able to get a bigger body wideout.
All right, let's say you're a podcast host, and maybe you drafted Paris Campbell in the first round of your rookie draft last year when Andrew Luck was still the quarterback. Could this podcast host potentially have some success with Paris Campbell this season?
I think so. You know, I wrote back in the spring when the Colts signed Phillip Rivers. I think two of the biggest beneficiaries from this signing will be Paris Campbell and Nyheim Hines. Yards after catch was an issue for the Colts last season. I think Rivers gets the ball out quick. He trusts his pass catchers to make plays after the catch. So I think Campbell, you know, knock on wood, staying healthy, I do think he can be a big time, you know, kind of that big play guy. Again, it might not be seven catches week in and week out, but he can get four catches and really impact a game for you. So if you are that podcast host out there, I think Paris Campbell can still pay some dividends for you.
It was me. It was a thinly veiled, thinly veiled prompt. Oh man, it was pretty brutal last year. Anyway, all right, let's keep moving on. Is there any other wide receiver worth mentioning before we get out of the wide receiver room?
No, I mean, I think those are the names, those four guys. I think, you know, if you look a little bit deeper onto the depth chart, it's pretty much guys competing for a roster spot. So I think these four are those guys. Tight end, you have Jack Doyle and Trey Burton. You know, Burton could be a guy that fills some different roles for you. Doyle's consistency is what the staff likes so much. But yeah, as far as the main pass catchers, I think those are them.
Well, let's talk about those tight ends here. This is where we usually cruise into that room. In Indy, we saw the departure of Eric Ebron to Pittsburgh, who, hey, 2 years ago was a massive fantasy boom. And like you mentioned, we also have the arrival of Trey Burton from Chicago, America's favorite dad player and ever-present Jack Doyle, as you mentioned, still on the scene. Tight end production has been fertile for fantasy gamers, especially from a streaming option for years now in Indy. What can we expect this year from these guys?
Yeah, you know, Doyle is certainly the father of two boys. And his consistency is what gets him on the field as much as it does. He's kind of a death by a thousand paper cuts type of tight end. Eight for 57, whatever, 7 for 63, you know, just games like that. And then Burton, you know, has history with Frank Reich in Philly. Had, you know, I think his career year really with Frank Reich as the offensive coordinator. Health is the big concern with him. He's going to have a role. It's not going to be necessarily exactly like Ebron, but he's going to have a role with this team where it's probably a little bit more versatile, might not be as vertical and as pass happy, but he's going to be on the field a good amount. Frank Reich loves to use multiple tight end personnel grouping. So I think Trey Burton is going to be that number two tight end. And the number two tight end for the Colts plays a good amount. So if you're in some very deep leagues, I think Trey Burton would be a good look. They still have Mo Alie-Cox, a guy that they like, kind of a bigger body guy. Someone that I think will see some playing time, but unless a big injury occurs, I just don't think he'll have the same sort of consistent role as some of the other guys.
All right, Kevin, we're going to get you out of here with one final question, and we're going to make you put yourself out there. It's a bit of a tough one. What is your boldest fantasy prediction for the Colts in 2020?
Oh, wow. That is a good one. Their defense will be a top 10 defense. I know that's not offensive related, but I think their defense will find a way to take the ball away a little bit more. I think the addition of DeForest Buckner is really going to help this football team just create more pocket pressure and disrupt some things and all of that stuff. So the Colts have probably not been a defense that many people have gone to, maybe when they're playing, Jacksonville or Tennessee in years past, just for kind of weekly matchups. But I think that this is a unit that actually can offer some consistency, some more playmaking as well.
Defense is part of the game. Most traditional leagues include a defensive slot, so that is great fantasy information. Thank you so much. Kevin, where can people find all your stuff? You've said it all.
Yeah, it's K Bowen 1070 on Twitter. It's Bowen, so you can find me over there. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And then all of my written content is over at 1075thefan.com. I also have a podcast called Kevin's Corner for fans out there as well. So always enjoy hopping on, David. It's kind of the annual reminder that football season's right around the corner, and hopefully that'll be the case come September.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. 3 years running. I appreciate you talking with me again, and stay safe and healthy out there in 2020.
You do the same, David.
Paris Campbell, respectable finish, redemption year. You are now dialed in.